Brother Lad Bogdanov has been with the organization, Sai organization, for the last 21 years. He has served the Sai organization in various official roles. Lad has helped with orchestrating Christmas choir in Puttaparthi. He has released several CDs of Sai devotional songs with albums titled Love Songs to God and Grace of God. Lad is also associated with an orphanage of 50 plus children in Coorg in Karnataka district. Swami blessed this orphanage by giving a name for this orphanage. These children from this orphanage participate in the children's choir in Parthi during Christmas, and Lad coaches them during for the Christmas choir. Without taking much of your time, I now invite Lad Bogdanov to the podium to share with us his Sai experiences.
Sai Ram, brothers and sisters. Sai Ram. Sai Ram to... I'm going to try to get my PowerPoint going here. My pranams to Swami's lotus feet, without whom I would not be standing here. Hallelujah. There's a God, and he lives in Puttaparthi and Chicago, because the PowerPoint is working. I'd like to start with a song that I taught the Naperville Center yesterday, and Ganesh suggested I actually put the words up on the screen so I'm not singing up here all by myself. When I look out over your satsang this morning, I see many familiar faces that I've seen in Prashanti over the last 21 years, and some new faces. What I'm going to share with you today is a little bit of my journey, and the subtitle of my talk today is Surrender. I don't have a white flag to wave up here, but if I did, you would understand. So, my orchestra, feel free to play along. This is a song that's in Around, and we tried to get this up into orbit yesterday, and we had a train wreck and a couple of near misses, but we're going to try again today. So I'm going to teach the first verse and the second verse, and then we're going to try to do this. This is some of the best bhajans I've heard in a long time, so I know that we can do this. We'll try it with men, and then we'll try it with the ladies. We'll do Around like Heart of the Mother, same idea. So it goes like this. You can join me as you catch it. To your hands I lay my spirit. And to your hands I lay my life. And to your hands I lay my spirit. Try that with me. Into your hands I lay my life. Ooh, that's beautiful. Let's go to the second one. Into your hands I lay my life. Gorgeous. Let's try that one again. Into your hands I lay my life. Boy, that sounded good. You're going to have to come to Naperville and give them lessons. All right. Okay. Boy, this sounded really good. Okay, so, how are we going to do this? Ladies, you start, because I hear there's a good lead singer over there on the corner. So you're going to start, and then we're going to, after you do your first verse, then we're going to come in with the second verse. So I'll start with the ladies. Here you go.
To your hands I lay my spirit. Go to the second part.
Into your hands I lay my spirit. To your hands I lay my life. Into your hands I lay my spirit. To your hands I lay. Into your hands I, into your hands I, into your hands I lay, into your hands I lay my life. Into your hands I, into your hands I, into your hands I lay, into your hands I lay my life.
Is a big bus, and I'm going to take you guys on the road. Wow, that's gorgeous. Wow. I woke up this morning, and I was asking Swami, what should I talk about today, because I don't like to repeat myself. How many people sitting here today were here at the talk yesterday? Uno, dos, tres. All right, you're going to have to put up with me again. How is it that a pale face is sitting in the Chicago Indian Embassy this morning, standing here before you, holding forth about my adventures with this fuzzy-haired friend of ours in very high places? How can this happen? I'm going to abbreviate my talk today because I want to show the slideshow of the orphanage at the end, and I want to leave enough room for that. So I'm going to kind of move through some of my experiences a little more quickly than I did yesterday. And let me begin by saying that I grew up in North Carolina. My dad was a doctor. My mom was an English teacher. My dad was a doctor at Duke University. And I spent a lot of time in the woods and in nature. Nature was really my first spiritual teacher. And I would sometimes just lie on the ground there, looking up through to the Carolina blue sky, through the pine trees, and I would just kind of dissolve into everything. I just would feel this ananda, this bliss. I didn't know what it was. But I knew that nature was good medicine for me. As a child, I grew up in segregationist South, and it was the transition between segregation and integration, so it was not a very pretty picture. And my mom especially was very active in the civil rights movement, and she would drive protesters to the sit-ins. And I was raised by two black nannies that would come in and help with the house cleaning and bathe us and cook for us. So I was used to living in with contact with the black culture. During the 60s, when desegregation finally came in, the school system that I had been attending pretty much collapsed. There was a lot of violence and there was a lot of racial tension, and my dad made the decision to send me to boarding school up in Connecticut, so I went to the Choate School near Wallingford, near New Haven. That was one of the best things that ever happened to me because I had a great education. It was a wonderful, safe environment. From there, I went to Cornell University, and I had probably what I would say was the first big trauma in my life. I had been an excellent student, a straight-A student, excelling in all levels in sports, and while I was there, my mom became suicidal. And I talked to her on the phone one day, my first semester there, and she told me that she was considering taking her life again. And I just broke down into tears, and I went into a deep depression. And I stopped attending class. I couldn't concentrate. I would read the same paragraph for an hour or two, and I just couldn't absorb anything, and I didn't realize that I was extremely depressed. And I eventually stopped going to class, and basically I flunked out. So this rising star, who had done well all my life, suddenly experienced Napoleon's Waterloo. So that summer, I realized that I was really not ready for college. I started working with my hands in construction, and that was my therapy. I became a carpenter. I learned how to build. I learned how to do wiring and plumbing and drywall, and all of these things were like therapy for me, and it gave me my self-confidence back. After 4 years of that, I became a building contractor, and I was accepted to the Berklee School of Architecture, and I went back and finished my BA there, much to my parents' relief. As I was standing there at graduation in my cap and gown in the hot sun, I heard Swami say inside, "You are not going to sit behind a desk anymore, young man." And I didn't know what that meant, but the economy was not doing well. Interest was quite high. Many of you here with a little gray hair probably rode through that financial cycle when interest rates were 18 to 20%. And all the architects in San Francisco were laying off their staffs. So my advisor, he said, you best stick with your construction company. You'll feed your family better that way. So I did. In 1986, I was sitting on the beach at sunset at Goat Rock. And I went into meditation. And I went very, very deep. And I heard Swami say inside, like a command, "You are going to massage school. And you're going to meet somebody there who is going to be very instrumental in helping you through a major transition." And then I heard this woman's voice, like a deep southern accent, like, "Hi, y'all. Welcome to the Chicago Psi Center." And I didn't know who this person was or what this voice was. So I came out of meditation. I told my ex-wife, "I'm going to massage school." And I found a place to go, and it was a residential program. We checked into our cabins, and my two roommates were a hippie from California and this born-again Christian woman who was the woman that I'd heard in the prophecy. And it turned out she was a healer and didn't know it. And she would put her hands on me sometimes when I was releasing a lot. I had never had massage before. And the man who trained me was like a bulldozer. He would just work with your body almost like, it was extremely deep, cathartic work. And if I was crying and releasing, she would just come and put her hand on me, and I would feel this deep peace. And it was the first time that I telepathed with somebody so directly. I hadn't had that experience before. So that same year, I had been struggling. I had feeling a lot of frustration. I was not satisfied with my work. My marriage was on the rocks. Things were deteriorating. I'd been with my partner for a long time. And I was searching. I didn't know what I was searching for, but I felt an emptiness in my life. And right around that time, I read the book Autobiography of a Yogi. And that book had a profound effect on me. And I started having the thought, Yogananda had Yukteswar as his guru, and Yukteswar had Lahari Mahashai as his guru. And I started thinking, where is my guru? I can't do this alone. I was feeling very frustrated, and I felt like I needed a master to help bring me to God. So for the next 3 years, I was praying this prayer, but I had never told anybody this prayer. And the prayer is this: Lord, if there's a master on the planet with the powers of Christ or greater, please help me find that master and help me totally surrender to that master and totally align my being with that master. Two years later, on my birthday, I went off to the Vedanta retreat in Alima, California, and I was staying in the monk's house. And I was there to fast and pray, and I was writing in my journal, Lord, how am I doing? What is my vision for the future? What is my purpose? I was asking all these questions of self-inquiry. And while I was there, I found a book in the library called The Holy Man and the Psychiatrist. And many years later, Dr. Sam, he signed my copy. I took that book up to my room, and I opened it up. And the moment I started reading that book and saw Swami's picture, I just started crying like a little baby, because I knew in that moment that I had found the master I had been praying for. I didn't know how I knew. It was a complete knowing. There was no question in my mind. There was no thought process. It was just instant. And I stayed up all night reading that book backwards and forwards till the sun came up the next morning. And I was saying yesterday, I pretty much ruined their copy because I cried on the bed every page. So that Christmas, I was on the airplane to see Swami for my first visit. Now, I want to back up a few steps because this is very important. I'm new to PowerPoint, so I'm trying to figure. Let me ask this question of a show of hands. How many people here have come to Swami through some severe crisis or life-threatening or health challenge? How many people were born into a family of devotees? Wow, okay. How many people came to Swami and it wasn't a severe trauma and it was more of a graceful gentle path. Wow. Okay. Well, I stand before you as one crucified Sai brother who came the hard way. And I want to share with you a little bit about what happened to me just before I found out about Swami and how I came to India. The year before I came to Swami, I had purchased a rental property in Oakland. And I ended up renting to a man who turned out to be the biggest drug dealer in West Oakland, and I didn't realize it. I was extremely naive. And when I tried to evict him, he put a contract out on me to have me killed. And after I was successful, I was able to evict him. I saw his wife on the street. He himself was stabbed to death in a drug deal. And when I saw his wife after he passed away, I begged for her forgiveness. I said, I never imagined that I would end up going to court with you and try to evict you and all that. And then she confessed to me that he had put a contract out on me to have me killed. During this period, while I was going to court and trying to get them out of the property so I could sell it, my money was going down. I was on the verge of bankruptcy, and my marriage was also very, very unsupportive. And I started to feel helpless, and I didn't know where to turn. And I started to feel desperate. And I guess it's the first time in my life that I ever had thoughts of suicide, because things got so bad. And I could feel this man was physically threatening. I would never go over to the property alone. I would always take a carpenter with me, and I would never go at night. One day, after I finally evicted him, and now I'm sitting with an empty house and I'm paying money to the bank and all my finances are going down and I can't sell it. It's in a rough neighborhood where there's prostitutes, there's drugs and everything like this. The only reason I bought that house was because it was offered to me at 50% of its value. And I was a contractor and I thought I'd fix it up and sell it and make a profit. But This is how Swami works. He hooks you with this 108-pound test line, and he baits the hook with whatever he knows that you're with using your desires and vasanas to reel you in. So anyway, one day I was walking out in the woods behind my house. And I was crying, and I walked out into the pasture, and I was just, my mantra was this, Lord, I surrender to you. I was just walking like this, Lord, I surrender to you. Lord, I surrender to you. I don't know, even know where I was walking. I was so distraught. And I just said, I surrender to you, Lord. I surrender to you. I don't know where to turn. I've done everything I can. I've completely created a mess out of my life. And I'm walking. Lord, I surrender to you. Lord, I surrender to you. And as I come out into this pasture, it's foggy and there's no sun. And it's starting to drizzle. Over this little lake, let me see if I can find this. Over this little lake appears this double rainbow. Now, I got this picture off the internet because I couldn't find one that represented that day. But imagine a rainbow a little taller than this room, double rainbows, about 30 feet tall and about 100 yards away. These rainbows appeared over this little lake with no sun, and it's drizzling, and they started coming towards me. Slowly, slowly, slowly. And I could see the ground changing color and the grass and everything. And then the rainbows came directly on top of me, and then they stopped. And at that moment, I felt this wave of Shakti, this electricity, pour down through my crown chakra, through my whole body. And I felt I was washed clean in that moment. And in that moment, I knew that God had heard my prayer. I'm standing there, I'm feeling this healing energy, and then I hear Swami say inside, and now a change is going to come. So I found my way back home. A couple of days later, I received this letter in the mail from somebody I've never met before. And it's a real estate agent who had seen my house, seen the for sale sign, and he said to me, in the letter, he said, I've seen your house. I have a buyer for your house. So I call him up, and I say, who are you, and how did you find my name? And you know, he said, I was driving through the neighborhood. I went to the county records, and I found out who owned the property. These Laotian and Cambodian people are coming over, and they're taking over these homes, and they're throwing out the drug dealers and the prostitutes, and they're fixing them up, and they're restoring them to livability. So this man turned out to be a devotee of Muktananda, and he used to take his wife to the center there in Oakland when Muktananda was alive and would come to give Shaktipat. So in 15 minutes, I quickly signed the papers because, you know, God sends the rowboat, then he sends the the helicopter. I wasn't waiting for the helicopter. I was in deep, deep yogurt for many, many months. And I knew when my life preserver was being thrown to me, I was going down. So to shorten that, to bring that story to a close, on the day I flew on the airplane to see Swami, that escrow closed, and I was able to pay off all my debts and put a nice, healthy check into the bank to give me a cushion to come home to. Now, when I got to the ashram, Swami was avoiding me deliberately. When I would sit on the front line, as soon as he would come down the line of men, as soon as he came in front of me, he would make a big circle around me, like I was radioactive, or I was telling history, like I had just been, you know, just walked through the sewers of Paris, and I wasn't smelling too good. And the men in my group started to notice this, and they started to, like, they didn't want to sit with me because I was contaminated, you know. And so this happened for about a week. And I thought something was wrong with me. Swami was forcing me deeper into self-inquiry. I came to understand this later on. Then on December 20th, he called us in for our first of two interviews that year. And in that interview, he gave me a pretty good chewing out in front of everybody. And I was not prepared for this. It was a pretty good scolding. The usual, mad, mad monkey mind. You're too impatient. You don't appreciate your parents, especially your mom. She carried you for 9 months. You're a man. You don't understand what it's like for a sacrifice that a woman makes to carry a child. On and on. And I was so embarrassed. I didn't want to come out of my room for 3 days after that interview. And all my side brothers and sisters saying, oh, you're so lucky the avatar talked to you. I was not feeling very lucky at all. I was feeling pretty awful. And the irony is I had just written my mom a long love letter that I had mailed before I got on the plane, thanking her for carrying me for 9 months. It was a long letter of appreciation. So as I didn't know whether Swami was using me as a lightning rod to teach a lesson to somebody in the interview that needed to hear that message, or I was still not appreciating her enough. So now I've had the cold shoulder. Swami's he's ignoring me, and then he chews me out and scolds me in my first interview. So now I'm a little scared of him. 8 days later, on December 28th, and I will remember this day for the rest of my life because it's a day that, it was the day I feel that I was reborn. Swami called us in for a second interview. And after he finished making vibhuti for the ladies, he waved his hand like this and he cupped it. And in his hand was a big pile of steaming halva, white cream of wheat. And it was you could see the steam still coming off of it. And he passed that around and we ate that. And I have never tasted anything as delicious in my life. And when I ate that prasad, I suddenly felt this deep peace come over me. And I don't know, I'm going to try to describe it in words. As I was sitting there, I felt this column of light coming up through the floor, up through my spine, going up through the heavens. And my mind completely stopped. And at the same time, I felt this love coming up inside of me that was like a cup overflowing, like a geyser. And it was coming from nowhere. It was just love, just pure sourceless love coming up inside. And I felt this deep, deep peace that I had never experienced before. And then I heard Swami say inside telepathically, this is the peace that passeth all understanding that you have read about in the Bible. And I had read about this in Yogananda's Autobiography of a Yogi, but I had never experienced it. And then Swami said internally, your purpose is fulfilled. You can die now. You have nothing to, there's nothing for you to do. There's nothing for you to read. There's no place for you to go. And while I'm sitting here, I'm hearing this. I feel like I'm merging into everything. I don't feel any separation. And I feel for the first time that I'm a spirit looking out through these eyes at everything that's happening in the interview room. But I am not this. Gradually, I came back into normal body consciousness, back into dualistic awareness. And I thank Swami as we left the interview room. But I was still a little bit in this bliss. So I walked up to past the meditation tree up to where the museum is. And I climbed up on a big rock so nobody would come near me because I didn't want to be disturbed. I was still in this heightened state. And I closed my eyes and I sat in meditation. And when I came out of meditation, there at my feet were 5 packets of interview vibhuti in the shape of a rainbow. And I just cried and cried and cried because Swami had never materialized for me before. And it wasn't until many years later that a Sai sister said, you goose, that was your rainbow that Swami had made for you before I had come when he had saved my life and protected me from that drug dealer. After that, Swami stopped avoiding me. He wouldn't, had been on ice and I'd been in the doghouse for that first week. Well, that pretty much finished. Ganesh, how much time do I have? 12:15, okay. Okay. That brings me to another song. How many of you know the heart, I am one with the heart of the mother? We sung it a lot in the ashram. I am one with the heart of the mother. You've heard this. This is written by Michael Stillwater. He wrote this one here. Beautiful song. After that day, nothing was quite the same. When I would look in people's eyes, I could see the God in them. My sense of the sacred deepened after that. I did come back into this consciousness, but Swami had given me a little taste of heaven on earth. And so this song to me embodies that feeling. And it's also around, but I don't think I'm going to burden you with all the so it goes like this. You can join me.
I am as God created me, in the light, in the love, in the glory. Try that with me. I am as God created me, in the light, in the love, in the glory. In the light, in the love, in the glory. In the light, in the love, in the glory. In the light, in the love, in the glory. I am. In the light, in the love, in the glory. In the light, in the love, in the glory. In the light, in the love, in the glory. I am. Back to the beginning. I am as God created. In the love, in the glory, I am as God created me. In the light, in the love, in the glory. In the light, in the love, in the glory. In the light, in the love, in the glory. In the light, in the love, in the glory, I am. In the love and the glory,
all right, ladies, by yourself.
I am as God created me, in the light, in the love, in the glory. I am as God created me, in the light, in the love, in the glory.
All right, you go on to the next part.
In the light, in the love, in the glory. In the light, in the love, in the glory. In the light, in the love, in the glory. In the light, in the love, in the glory. I am. In the light, in the love, in the glory. In the light, in the love, in the glory. In the light, in the love, in the glory. I am. In the light, in the love, in the glory. In the light, in the love, in the glory. In the light, in the love, in the glory.
Excelente.
Thank you. So what do you think happened to this pale face when he got home from India after his first trip? I was basically worse than a born-again Christian who had just gotten religion. And I wanted everybody and their brother to know about Sai Baba and to have the same experiences that I had had. And boy, was I in for a rude awakening. I was like the kind of person who, if you ask for a glass of water, I would take the whole bucket and pour it all over you. And I came to the realization that everybody was meant to come to Sai Baba in this lifetime. I came home, I became very active in the Sai organization. I taught Balvikas in San Francisco. And songs started coming to me. I had never written any songs, but the day after I graduated from massage school, songs started coming, and about 45 came over the last 23 years. Now, what I have brought today on the book table back there, and all my CDs and all my book and the books that I brought, everything is free. There are four books there on the orphanage where I work in India, and I want to talk a little bit about that next. And there's photographs in there of the kids and everything. So because of my songwriting, I produced a CD in 1994 called Love Songs to God, Volume 1, which combined songs from different faiths, and there's a few of those back there. And about 8 years ago, I get a call on the phone from a man who's moving out, who's from Chicago, but he was living in North Carolina. He's now the headmaster of the orphanage. And he says, I'm coming out to California. I want to meet you. I say, well, who are you? He said, well, I heard your CD, Love Songs to God, Volume 1, and I want to meet the person who made that CD. And so we met. And instantly, I felt like he was a brother from a long-lost lifetime. And we've been best buddies ever since. He later moved to India, and he and his wife started sponsoring children in Puja Party in the schools. One night, three or four of the girls came home, and they had been beaten. They had marks all over them. And they said, Uncle, Auntie, we cannot go back to school. This teacher is too cruel. And that was the day that they made the decision to start taking in kids into their apartment and starting a homeschool. And over the years, it's grown and grown. We have 46 children now. And it was last year or 2 years ago, Swami actually sent two of his ashram officials to the orphanage when we were in Whitefield. They showed up unannounced, no phone call, nothing, and said, Swami knows the work that you're doing, and we are going to give you an official Telugu name. My computer's too slow. And we're going to make you a sister school to the boys' orphanage behind the ashram. Now it's thinking there. This is the Telugu name that Swami gave us, which means the compassionate home for the upliftment of society. This is Michael and Aleli, the headmaster and headmistress. They look a little nicer than that on my computer screen. For some reason, this projector is making everybody look like they came from Mars. These are all street kids that were living on the streets of Puja Party. And look how they're just shining now. I'm going to just share a little miracle about the orphanage before I tell one or two stories and then show the slideshow at the end. Michael was called to go to Aurobindo's ashram to take a course from a famous architect that was teaching rammed earth construction. And you take the dirt from your own property, you put it in the machine, you mix it with the cement and water, and you put it in this mold, and then you pull the press, and it creates these blocks and bricks under 1,500 pounds pressure, and then you cure them for 30 or 60 days, depending upon how much weight they have to support. And while he was at Aurobindo's ashram taking this course, he met a man from UNICEF. And Michael was saying, you know, we've got these children. We're living in a duplex in Whitefield. We're coming out of the seams. We really need to buy some land where we can build a new school. And this man says, I know somebody that has some land for sale in Korg in the coffee plantation area, but he has one condition. He will only sell that land to somebody who is doing God's work. This is Swami's grace. So he takes Michael back to Korg, and they look at a couple of pieces. It's not right, not right. As soon as Michael walked on the land, it was 13 acres of coffee plantation, he felt, this is it, we're home. Now a year goes by, and we don't have the money. We needed $50,000 to purchase this property. And we just, I mean, the orphanage, basically, Michael and Lily have never asked for a penny, and the money just comes from Swami. And some weeks we don't know if we have enough money for the propane to drive down to Madikeri to get the vegetables, or it's really weak, it's very much week to week. So 2 weeks before the drop dead date to buy the property, the owner's saying, you're going to come up with the money, or I'm going to have to sell it to somebody else. And we did not have the money. A man shows up at Michael and Lely's flat. He's a healer from Ireland. He's had a number of interviews with Swami. And he has a nonprofit where he takes donations and he just gives them out to other organizations. And he'd been working with other orphanages in India. Anyway, they have a cup of tea. This man is quite advanced. And he said, I am shown by Swami internally who I'm to donate to before I even meet them. But I wanted to meet you in person to make sure that you're legit, you know, that this is on the level. And so after a cup of tea, about 45 minutes or an hour, he pulls out his checkbook and he wrote a check for 38,000 euros, which was around 50,000 US at the time. And that opened the door to allow us to buy the land and to start building the new school. We have a spring that is flowing 12 months out of the year at the top of the property, so everything is gravity fed. Now we have two milk cows, Ganga and Yamuna, and they're producing about 42 liters of milk per day. Now Michael, when he lived in Chicago, he ran two restaurants, and he's always been a bodhisattva, in my opinion. After the restaurant would close at night, or 10:30 or 11, he would cook a whole nother meal, and he would bring the homeless in and feed all the homeless in that area. That's who Michael is. They've never taken a penny in salary all these years they've been working with the kids. They wouldn't even think of it. They live on a little bit of savings that they have, in San Francisco. We have a lot of dogs at the school now because a few years ago, one of the children was kidnapped by a relative that tried to hold the girl for ransom. Because they look at these foreigners coming and they think we're all rich. And they think we're made out of money. So this happened in Whitefield. The child didn't come. Nobody knew where the child was. About 5:30, 6 o'clock in the evening, they went out looking. They were camped by the side of the road somewhere in Katagodi. And Michael is a black belt in martial arts. And he held the guy. He said, what are you doing? So they asked the child, do you want to stay with your relative or do you want to come back to the school? No, uncle, I want to come home. I want to come back to the school. So this is Michael. The townspeople were so angry that this man had kidnapped the child because they love the kids and they know about the orphanage and they've known about the school for so long because it was in Whitefield before we moved up to the land, that they grabbed their sticks and their forks and things and they came to kill this man that kidnapped the child. And Michael actually stood there and protected him and saved his life. This man later repented and apologized, and he's become, has a good relationship with the school. But so many things happened. So after that, people donated dogs, and then they grew up as puppies with our children puppies, and then the security was no longer an issue. Now that we're up in the land, the kids can roam free up and down the coffee trails and everything, and it's everything is safe. So I still have a little bit of time. Okay. I want to share a funny story with you before I show the video of the orphanage. My specialty is putting in skylights. I've been a building contractor for 31 years, but in 1994, in my morning meditation, Swami kept whispering to me, call yourself Mr. Skylight, call yourself Mr. Skylight. And I would just say, Swami, that is so weird. Mr. Skylight, and he kept pressing on me. When Swami wants me to do something, he'll just keep nudging me, And So I asked my customers, how do you like the name? They all loved it. So January came around, I had to renew my Yellow Pages, so I told the representative at the Yellow Pages, I said, ask for Lad Bogdanov Marin's Mr. Skylight. And so there it was in my Yellow Page ad for the next year. In March, I'm sitting at my desk in my home office, and I'm looking at Swami's picture, and I'm saying, Swami, we finished the remodeling for the upstairs. The downstairs looks like a war zone. Where's the money going to come from to finish the downstairs? This is your responsibility, Lord. And then I just gave it over. Within two or three minutes, the phone rang. And the man says on the line, he says, hello, this is Ron Hazelton from Channel 7. We're teaming up with Good Morning America, and we want you to be on national TV as Mr. Skylight. And I'm saying to him, who is this? Is this a crank call? He says, don't you know who I am? I said, no, I've never watched TV. He says, I'm Ron Hazelton. I'm the house doctor. I'm on every morning at 10 o'clock, you know. And it was how to fix up houses. So I said to him, why did you call me? He said, we're doing a whole series of instructional videos, fireplaces, kitchens, baths, and the first one happens to be on skylights. And I was looking in the Yellow Pages, and I saw your name, Mr. Skylight. And I just jumped out at me, and I called you first. He said, you are Mr. Skylight, aren't you? So he said, I'm coming out in 2 days with the camera crew. If you can have a skylight ready, you're it. I was just starting a skylight a few blocks from my house. So he said, just cut the sheetrock out of the ceiling, but don't cut the roof. I want the dark kitchen. Then you're going to go up on the roof, and we're going to cut the shingles out, and then the light will pour in, and we'll get the before and after, and we'll get the high contrast, and it'll be dramatic for the show. So my carpenter, who was helping me for a few months, he's a Psy brother. He had done a rotation in Parliament in the UK while he was at Columbia and as a PR help for one of the MPs. So he wrote out a little press release, and we called the local newspaper, and so they came out. So 2 days later, you've got the ABC Good Morning America with their camera and truck and everything in the local independent journal newspaper, and this poor customer didn't know what happened to them. It was like Grand Central. All the neighbors are standing out there watching all this. And I have to admit, I had never been on TV before, and I was a little nervous. So when they handed me the microphone for my big moment, I was like, skylights! It's been a wild ride. Now, I've always said that God is my marketing agent. 2 years later, I was invited to go to the youth conference in Denmark in 97. Who here was there? One lady was here yesterday that was there. Nobody? Okay. Hal Honig, Phyllis Christo, Jagadishan. Oh, it was fantastic. We stayed in the school where Hans Christian Andersen on that island where he wrote all his fairy tales. So I went there, did some music, and then I was invited to Sweden a few weeks later to also do some music at some Psy events. And I didn't have the two plane tickets that were $1,500 each from Lufthansa. So I said, Swami, you got to take care of this, Lord. So a few days later, I get a call from the San Francisco Chronicle newspaper. And the lady gets on the phone and she says, I'm from the construction section and we're doing a 2-page color spread on skylights. And we want to feature you and a couple of other contractors in our newspaper. And I said, why did you call me? She said, you put in a skylight for a friend of mine. So people think that because I was on national TV as Mr. Skylight that I just surfed that wave to the bank. It didn't happen that way because they never put our phone number up on the local TV station, so maybe a handful of people called. But what it did allow me to do was to put featured on ABC's Good Morning America in my advertising so that when I would go out to the job, the customer, they're always worried, you know, are these things going to leak? I said, well, not until it starts raining, for God's sake. If I don't get a good giggle out of him when I tell him that joke, then I know it's going to be a rough ride. But when people think that you've been on national TV, they actually think that you know what you're doing. Well, I wasn't going to tell him the truth. So Baba has always been there for me when I needed it the most. All right, I need help from the technical department. Here we go. Okay. I want to show you a little bit about what I do. So this is my website. And the colors are terrible on the screen. It's beautiful here. And I'm one of the few people in our county that will take trusses inside the attic and expose them and dress them out with sheetrock. And so you can see the bones of the building working. It takes a long, long time to do that, but I feel like it's more like art. Okay, one quick story before I show the slideshow of the orphanage. When I came back from India, I was feeling very sad because I was feeling like I was separate from Swami. And after these incredible experiences that he'd given me, I still didn't really believe that he was omnipresent. This is how the mad monkey mind works. So I'm lying in my bed in California, and I'm crying, Swami, I miss you, I miss you. Are you really omnipresent? Am I just a faceless devotee out of millions? You know, do you really remember who I am? And I didn't get any customer calls the whole month of January. I only received two. The first one was on Sai Street in San Anselmo, California. But that wasn't good enough because Mr. Skylight is pretty dense. So Swami sent me to it the second estimate on Why Worry Court. I mean, I stand before you, brothers and sisters, as probably one of the dumbest devotees that I know. So, Swami also has a sense of humor. 2 years ago, I fell off the roof on September 11th, of all days to come tumbling down on the anniversary of the Twin Towers coming down. A few days before, I had a clairvoyant dream where I saw myself lying in the hospital and I was looking at the nurse's whiteboard, which she'd written, fell from ladder, fractured pelvis. So now I am bionic. I have a 3.5-inch titanium pin holding Humpty Dumpty together again. While I was recovering while I was in the hospital, one of the nurses came to me on the last day I was there before I was transferred to the old folks' home. And she says, I can't understand what's going on in this room. She says, all the people that come to see you, they're different. There's so much light in here. These people, they're just shining. And I said, well, they're all people from my church. I didn't tell her from Sai Baba. She says, what church do you belong to? I said, well, it's kind of a unity church. Oh, she says, unity, I've heard of unity. I say, well, it's more like unity of all faiths. I'm just tiptoeing because, you know, not everybody can handle the avatar. So I finally said, okay, it's an organization based on my spiritual teacher, Satya Sai Baba, teaches the unity of all faiths. She says, Sai Baba, I have two friends who are devotees of Sai Baba. And just as she says that, I hear Swami say inside, they are to have my vibhuti. Very forceful, like a command. So I had this little container with me next to the bed. And by the way, I brought some vibhuti from Sri Rangapatnam, and even though I flunked chemistry at Cornell, I am a master pharmacist, and I, with the assistance of one of your Seva dolls, we mixed this in with all the vibhuti here today, so it's very, very sweet. Anyway, there was nothing left in this container. I opened it up, and I looked in there, and I had been licking my finger to get the last little grains of vibhuti out the last couple of days because I was out, and I was 2 hours from where I lived, and I knew I could get one of my family members to get some from me when I got home. So here, they are to have my vibhuti. And I'm looking at this empty container here like, Lord, what am I going to do? So I took a piece of paper, I tore a little piece of paper, I creased it, and I just went through the motions. I just picked this thing up, and I just said, okay, if there's a grain in there, then this is all they're going to get. And as I lifted this up like this, Swami materialized Vibhuti up to about a quarter inch in the bottom. It was the same real sweet stuff that I love. And I filled her paper up as much as I could, and I didn't say anything to the nurse. But as I was pouring this Vibhuti into the paper, I heard him say, "You will never live in scarcity consciousness again." So, Swami has a wonderful sense of humor. 1 year later, I was installing a skylight on a commercial medical building at 911 Moraga Road in Lafayette, California. Now, how weird is that? I was so superstitious that we just unloaded it off the truck. I refused to install it on that day. We came back the next day on Saturday when there was no patients, so that, you know, nothing would fall on the patients coming in and out. But Swami put a punctuation mark at the end of my swan dive off the roof with no parachute the year before. Now I'm going to show you a short slideshow. There's a soundtrack to it, but I'm going to be talking over the soundtrack a little bit, just explaining some of the things. And at the very end of the slideshow, I put some slides in there of Christmas of 2005. Michael Inalele, the headmistress and headmaster, and I were having lunch at Cy Havens, and right in the middle of the lunch, I felt that same power come over me, and I said to Michael, "Michael, if it's your destiny, the avatar will call you up during the Christmas performance and materialize for you in front of everybody in the hall." And then I leaned back, and it was not me who said that. I mean, like, I was looking around to see who said that. But it was just like this column of energy came over me, and I was just like a microphone, and I just delivered that prophecy. And sure enough, a couple of days later, after the Christmas performance, Swami called Michael up, and he materialized a beautiful gold chain and a Shiva amulet, and I have pictures of that at the end. But the reason I share this with you is not that I stand before you as some ordained prophet, but that Michael and Aleli had been doing this work with no acknowledgement from Swami outwardly for many years, and finally he acknowledged him in public. When we first started construction on the school, it was monsoon season, and it was very, very difficult. And there was times when Michael said that he was just at the breaking point. The rain was so powerful, even though they tried to put tarps over the concrete blocks, the rain was making everything twice as hard. And one night, Swami materialized in the room where he was staying up there on the land, and he had a book in his hand, and he was sitting in one of the chairs. And I said, "Well, Michael, what did you guys talk about?" He said, "We didn't talk about anything. We just sat there quietly. I continued doing my work, and he just sat there with his book just looking at me, and we were totally at peace." And that was one of those forks in the road where Michael didn't know whether he was going to be able to make it or not, because he didn't speak the local language. He had, like, all these workers to manage, and the weather was awful. It was almost like being like a captain of a ship tying himself to the mast to keep the ship from going down. So all along, Swami has been there. He's materialized Vibhuti at the orphanage on the pictures and things at different times, on Shivaratri and other times, to give his blessing. And I do have to make one correction, because Ganesh said that the children participate in the Christmas choir, but Indian children are not allowed in the overseas choir at this time. So we bring, you know, about 20 of the kids by bus to Puja party, and they stay in the flat there in Saigori, but the International Children's Choir that I work with, you know, every year in the ashram in Sai Kuan Hall, that is all overseas devotees. That is not the local Indian children. So I just want to make that little correction. So sit back and enjoy these beautiful cuddle bugs. Thank you. Aleli is from Manila. She's Filipina. That's little Davy practicing her alphabet. Now I don't know why the color is so bleached out on this projector, because I don't know if there's a way to adjust it or not. This is a woman named Jennifer Gaze from the UK who wrote a book about the orphanage called Begging for Change, which is self-explanatory. And I have a few of those books over on the bookstore shelf over there. This is before the harvest. They do a puja before they harvest the coffee every year. You can see how lush the land is up there. It's beautiful. This is the duplex that we had in Whitefield for a few years before we outgrew it. And this is one of the guard dogs. That's Michael. This is a visit to a local playground. This is a man that Swami sent who's a brilliant engineer. He's built machines from scratch, and he's helped us a lot with the construction. Some of the dogs got loose, and they made puppies, and so the children love to go to the puppy pen and cuddle the puppies. This is my Psy choir. It's a little Manju. She's 10 years old in that picture. And this is a neighboring farm that donates all the hay for our milk cows. The children have really thrived being in nature and being in a safe, loving environment. The oldest girls just took their 10th standard exams and got straight A's, the highest you can get on the exams. You can see how beautiful the land is. We have visiting teachers that come and spend time with the kids from all over the world. This is June from California. She came and did a bunch of art, and the kids drew prayer flags. Six months of rain is very wet. These are visiting teachers from Oregon. That's the Indian Air Force practicing. It's very lush. We have cardamom, all kinds of spices, bananas, papayas, cocoa. There's just a few more slides here. This little boy, Marty, when he came, he was very, very sick. Now he's very healthy. So I invite you all to come and hang out, if you're up that way, near Madikeri above Mysore. And just have fun with the kids. That was Mustafa when he was a puppy. There's no such thing as a fast food stop when you're driving with a busload of kids. It's a little snake that Ganga found. We had a visiting artist come from Singapore who painted murals, and the kids all painted murals on the side of the building. And when the weather's good, then we have class outside. One of the friends, he used to do breakdancing in El Salvador as a child growing up to earn money. He was so poor, so he was teaching the kids to breakdance. This is at Christmas at Saigori's. This is Helen. She's a retired businesswoman from New York. She's teaching the kids some business principles. This is my daughter, Ariana, who I took to India for the first time this year. And here we are singing the Vibhuti prayer after satsang. This was another little friend. This is my daughter wearing her first sari. Just a few moments before we went to perform for Swami at Christmas last year. And this is one of our neighbors in my flat. My daughter was fascinated by the monkeys. And this is Madikeri. It's a town with a lot of religious tolerance. There's a mosque and Christian churches and Buddhist temple and Hindu temple. They all seem to get along with each other. Here are the kids helping construct the new teacher's cottage. There's the walls and the framing going up. And there's the teacher's cottage that's almost finished. It's done now, but this is an in-progress shot. This is Kalpana horsing around on a guitar. Somebody came last Christmas and donated all new money for all new purple uniforms. And the older girls help out with the meals, with the cleaning. All the kids help out with laundry. And this is Swami materializing that gold chain and Shiva amulet on Christmas of 2005. And he had trouble getting it on, so he singled Michael to go around, and Michael laid his head in his lap, and he put it on him, and Michael said he just disappeared when he put his head on his lap. There's a close-up here showing all the detail. The kids were fascinated by all that. And this is what our coffee looks like. It turns bright red when the berries are ready for harvest. All by Swami's grace, and His grace alone. What do you have now, RT? What do you do? Yeah. Okay. So I'm done. Okay. Thank you, and Sai Ram. I have to tell you that the budgets today were some of the most smoking budgets I've heard in a long time. So happy to be here.